Hello and welcome to The Hill's Digital Health Innovation Podcast. The Hill is a digital health catalyst based at Oxford University Hospitals, managing innovation and bringing digital technology into the NHS. Here at The Hill, we're very passionate about needs-led innovation, and a big part of that is understanding the realities of health and care. This series will be bringing you a range of voices from the front line of clinical care, hearing about their daily work and what opportunities they see for innovation and improvement. I'm Megan Morris-Carter, and I'm joined here today by Sudhir Singh, consultant in geriatric medicine and general medicine. Welcome, Sudhir. It's lovely to see you.
Thanks, Megan. Nice to be here.
So, Sudhir, can you tell us a little bit about your job and your day-to-day and what you get up to?
Yes, of course. So I'm a consultant at the Oxford Radcliffe University Hospitals Trust, and I've been here now nearly 20 years as a consultant. And part of my role is being a consultant in geriatric medicine and general medicine. And I've, over the years, picked up other leadership roles along the way. I'm currently, or for the last 7, maybe 8 years now, I've been clinical director for Acute Medicine Rehabilitation Trust, which is one of our large, well, is our largest directorate and covers the emergency department, acute medicine, geriatric medicine, stroke, hospital at home, ambulatory, a few other things as well, therapies.
And how did you end up where you are today?
By luck more than design, I think. I think I started off with being clinical lead within my own department and within geriatric medicine. And then from there, one thing led to another. And part of the reason why you're interviewing me today is my interest in digital and electronic patient records, which is, I think, probably where some of my interest really sparked off. And that was back in 2011, 2012, I think, when the Trust was just starting its rollout of electronic prescribing. Prior to that, we were doing prescriptions on paper drug charts, which were troublesome in themselves because pharmacy couldn't see them, and they often went down to pharmacy, which meant that I couldn't see them. And so part of our rollout was to bring electronic prescribing to the Trust, and we, along with lots of colleagues within the digital field, rolled that out. And I think that's where my interest has sparked from. And from there, I moved on to being the clinical director for acute medicine and rehab because I became more interested in leadership, more interested in the change and the impact you could have by, I suppose, interest, enthusiasm, and having some ideas about where the direction of travel should be.
It's quite interesting, isn't it, doing a digital transformation like that. Mm. A lot of it's about people and about change management. What are the lessons that you've learned from that, from a leadership perspective?
I think it was definitely my first step in the direction of something that was outside the boundaries of my own local department. And I think that was difficult in itself. So there was a learning for me. I think there was a learning for me as a young consultant, and trying to influence and listen to and talk to colleagues who often more senior, different levels of experience, different specialties. And what I was leading at that time with colleagues was a digital drug chart, essentially, that would be across the whole Trust. And at the time, we had over 1,000 beds. So that was quite a daunting task in itself. So there was a definite learning for me and a development over that year to year and a half. And I think the thing I picked up and what reflected back to me was that I think people are frightened of change. We get used to doing the things we do in the way that we do it because that's how we've done it. And I think big changes really do frighten people, and they don't know how to handle it sometimes. And that was one of the things I took away and try to help people come to terms with, is trying to get them to understand why we were doing something. And then also for me to understand really where they were coming from, what their anxieties were, how their service thought, not so much how they thought, but how they did things within their service, and try to make whatever development we had in tune with their needs and not fully, I suppose, not all about what I thought we were delivering, but what they needed us to deliver. I think that's where a lot of things that we've successfully delivered over the years has come from, partly the external looking in need, but also the internal looking out need, and trying to marry those two together. And I think one of the advantages I had at that time and do have still is the fact that I work within a general field rather than a super specialist field. And in a super specialist field, you can have small numbers of very complex patients, whereas in a general field, you have large numbers of sometimes complex, but larger volume of patients. And therefore, what we were trying to deliver was for volume and for the masses, and that would be in tune with the vast majority of patients and clinicians that were having to interact with whatever innovation we had at the time, in this case, digital prescribing. And I think that was helpful, trying to bring those two together. But I did face a lot of stress and distress, sometimes anger, and it was interesting how we dealt with those personally as well as with for them to deal with it. And that took time. I think you have to give people time to come to terms with what you're doing, but also give them the space to put their views across, release some tension, and then try to address the issues in a sort of calmer way rather than, I don't like confrontation. It's not helpful on the whole.
I think you've come up with a lot of good points there, Sadia. You know, I think that idea of having the pull from within, you know, really understanding what something is going to do for the person who's got to implement it and kind of what they would like to achieve with it is hugely important, because it does, in a sense, move some of that anger or distress or disappointment to perhaps excitement or enthusiasm or you know, at least acceptance of the idea that this might actually make their lives better if they can see what benefits there are for themselves and for the role that they're doing.
Yeah, and I think it is that piece to show them that actually, if they help us with, if we're at a design phase, help us with the design, or if it's implementation, help us to understand how best to implement in their area. I think that really then brings them along and it makes it successful. One of the ones we did a few years after that one, I think, was digital ECG, so an electrical recording of your heart. And people got hung up on the color of the tracing, which is interesting what they got hung up about. We had innumerable meetings about the fact that the digital paper, so-called, didn't have red lines on it. Because anyone who's seen an ECG will remember the paper ECGs were on red, were on a white background with red checked lines. And the check approach was to give you an idea of how fast the rhythm was going. But people really felt the habit of looking at something that had red lines on it, and changing to a black and white lined recording was very uncomfortable for a lot of people. And it's such a simple thing, but trying to understand why someone would be so uncomfortable just going from color to black and white was really strange. And although I've said you've got to try and understand where people are coming from, at some point, you've got to get over the habits of a career, essentially. As far as I've remembered, I mean, I graduated in 1995 as a medical student into a doctor, and we've always had red lines on an ECG. And to change to a different one sometimes feels strange. But now we've been running that for, I think, about 7 or 8 years, and no one's bothered about it anymore.
Yeah, it is sometimes the simplest of things that can make people feel uncomfortable, isn't it? And I think that sort of change in habits and practices is really challenging when it comes to innovation. And there has to really be that sort of burning platform, in a sense, that real need for the innovation, the real desire for it, in order to make people feel that they're willing to make that change. I know you've done a few things around point of care testing as well, haven't you? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So one of our services that we've had very successfully has been around ambulatory medicine and hospital at home. So ambulatory medicine is where we've managed to bring patients in to a day environment where we condense things that used to be done over 2 or 3 days, such as investigations, blood tests, seeing a specialist team, and put it all together into one day and allowing them to go home, which most people want to be at home rather than in hospital overnight. And one of the ways we followed them up by having a specialist group of nurses called the hospital home team, who then go and visit the patient at home, check that their progress is being made, sometimes deliver interventions such as antibiotics or fluids, but also check up on them. And that's where the point of care testing has come in, where we have with the help of colleagues in the biochemistry and hematology labs, we've implemented point of care testing, which allows you to take a couple of drops of blood and put it on a slide, put it into a cartridge, which is the cartridge itself is probably the size of a matchstick box. And the device itself is, I suppose, half the size of a bag of sugar, a small bag of sugar. And that result gives you that small blood sample will give you a result within a couple of minutes. So you can get kidney function, you can get blood count, you can get infection markers. There are lots more coming online, such as liver blood tests and other things. And essentially, you can condense what currently, if you send it to the lab, takes a couple of hours into a couple of minutes. And that means you can make your decision as to which direction to go in clinically with the patient, with their relative, while you're there, rather than having to send it off to another lab and you go away and do something else. You get delayed and then you come back. And then everything becomes delayed and the patient's wondering where you've been, but you've been seeing other people. Whereas this way, you can get everything you need very, very quickly. And so point of care testing is increasingly becoming the norm in the community. And we follow up patients with kidney failure, with infections, with derangement and abnormalities of sodium and potassium quite easily now. And then treat them. And you can find out what's wrong and put the intervention in straight away without having to move the patient to hospital. So we go out to them. Alongside point of care blood tests, we have started to look at what's called point of care ultrasound, where you can do an ultrasound with a probe that plugs into the bottom of your phone. And yes, you need the software and you need training on how to acquire the images and interpret them. But increasingly, several of our team are now becoming proficient in it. And you can do a scan of the lung and tell the difference between fluid on the lung or inflammation or infection on the lung, which was really helpful during COVID times to tell the difference between breathless people who are breathless because of COVID or because of pneumonia. And you can scan the legs looking at circulation problems. You can scan the kidneys to see whether kidney function is poor because the kidneys are blocked or the patient's dehydrated, and you can tell the difference on a point of care ultrasound. So there are multiple uses. If you didn't have point of care ultrasound, you're then having to either make a best judgment view or you're having to bring the patient to a hospital to get an x-ray or a departmental scan. And that sometimes is not what the patient wants. And if you can come up with an answer without moving the patient, that's all the more advantageous for patient and for family and for ambulances who may have to move the patient.
Yeah, sounds great for everyone involved. And, you know, who doesn't want to be at home if they can manage it? And do you get instances where you have too much data or you're not quite sure what to do with the information you can get?
I think at the moment we're probably all right. Where we haven't started delving deeper, except in research fields, is that sort of metadata, because we're collecting so much information about patients and how they move through our hospitals that it's sometimes hard to see the wood from the trees. But at the moment, the things we're getting hold of are useful to us clinically. They're easily available. Things that are not available, I suppose, are our information pieces that are stuck in different bits of software. So, for example, one of our downsides, and I think this is everywhere, we can't see sometimes what's in a general practice electronic record because the two records don't fully talk to each other, or what's in social care records because, again, those three service systems don't talk to each other. So I think at the moment we're probably a bit more lacking in information rather than having too much at the moment.
What else do you think could help to deliver that sort of service? I mean, you've obviously done a lot of innovation already, but I think you've got some other ideas as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, part of the beauty of running such a big group of services is that you come across people who've got problems, and then they've also got potential solutions. And we've got most of the services I run are involved in either rehabilitation end or the emergency care end of people's illness. And one of the things, and we spoke about this a few months back, is that we're looking at community services where the, as I said, the hospital or home nurses go out and see a patient at home and deliver antibiotics or medications or fluids. And one of the things we're looking at is how to be more productive. What we want our expert nurses to do is be with the patient, assess them, treat them, reassure and support them. And what we don't want them to be doing too much of is driving up and down or stuck in a traffic jam. And at the moment, they have to go and pick up medications periodically. And that may not be local to the patient. It may be not be local to where they are. So one thing we talked about was whether there is a role for something like drone technology, where drones could deliver medications to a specific location in and near the patient's location. So if the nurse was seeing a patient in Whitney, but then had to go to Standlake, for example, not a long distance away, but still a distance, could they have those medications delivered to Standlake somewhere? Or would the nurse have to come all the way back to the John Radcliffe to pick up the medications to then go back to Standlake, which is a long journey? And I think that as we develop, as technology develops and opportunity develops, I think the productivity gains that we could have could be quite huge with things like that.
I'm interested in the productivity gains because I think fundamentally the service is operating on limited resource. It's always important to sort of try and save time and energy where you can. Have you seen significant increases in productivity per staff when using technologies, any of the ones you've mentioned or others that you've implemented?
I think if you look at electronic prescribing and digital ECGs, I think there's no doubt there have been improvements there. I would be on a ward round and there would be regular occurrences where you would not have the drug chart available because it was down in pharmacy because we needed to order a medication. And often the nurse would be down in pharmacy with the drug chart because they had to hang around while waiting for the drug to be available and then bring it back. So the sheer fact that we've got a digital drug chart that everybody who needs to see it can see it means that I don't have to go chasing for the drug chart when I do my ward round or any other member of the medical team. It means that we can adjust the drug chart as we need to rather than having to find time to come back later and that would delay treatments. It means that the nurses are on the ward more because they're not now going downstairs waiting for pharmacy to deliver the medications. And I think pharmacy are also more efficient because they're now not waiting for somebody to bring them the drug chart. They can just dial into the patient's record and get medications out and they can come up with the porters. So I think that's a really good example of where everybody within the link is that little bit more efficient multiple times every single day, day in, day out. The digital ECGs is another one. We used to have to pull the old ECGs to see if what we were looking at today was any different to what was done on an ECG a year ago. But now, because we've been running digital ECGs for 6-7 years, there's a whole wealth of information there. And now where, you know, we stopped pulling medical notes when patients got admitted quite a few years ago now, because there's so much information, you just don't need the old medical notes anymore. Very rare instances you'll get them. But that's all so much more efficient because now I can make a decision at the point I see the ECG rather than saying, well, let's get the old one and I'll come back this afternoon. And that's automatically brought in a sort of 4 or 5 hour delay into the patient's decision making. Now I can see today's ECG is no different to last year's ECG. And the patient and I can have a conversation as what do we do about that. And if that means they can go home, well, they can go home now, not 4 or 6 hours later when the notes come up. So I think there's a huge knock-on benefit to having things easily available in a longitudinal way. I think sometimes you have it now, but you have to wait a few years for it to mature. And that's what we had to do with the digital ECGs. We had to think about, did we want to scan all these old ECGs in? Or actually, did we need to just let the digital ECG process move forwards? so that there'd be hundreds and thousands of these things in the records over the years. And that's where we got up to in the end, that actually the benefit was actually letting time pass so that we had more and more ECGs in the system. And I think the same goes for, we're now documenting all of our clinical encounters on the electronic patient record. All the different professional groups, nurses, therapists, doctors, everybody is really in the record, but writing electronically. So now we can see everybody's thoughts and it's clear. And you don't have to try and interpret handwriting or other bits of ways of writing, which is, I'm not saying anything about doctors' handwriting, but they weren't the best, were they?
I couldn't possibly comment. You've got a huge portfolio, Sudhir. And so you mentioned sort of one area, you know, this sort of delivery of medications, which might be quite useful to work on. Are there other sort of challenges or opportunities that you see for innovation that you'd like to see pushed forward?
One of the things we tried to do now, I think it was just before COVID, it was about 2018, 2019. Anyone who's been in a hospital will know the bleep system and how if you've held a bleep, they can become troublesome after a little while because they're loud and all you get is a telephone, a five-digit message, which is the telephone extension. If you're trying to bleep somebody, you don't know whether they've seen it, whether they've responded, when they're going to respond. And there's all sorts of inefficiencies with the current system of how to get hold of teams within a hospital setting. And using the bleep system, which is our current process, just seems so archaic in the days when now we've all got WhatsApp groups and we can FaceTime and we can do video calls and Teams messages. You can work on documents with multiple users at the same time. Why are we so linear in this, what seems like an analog system, which is the bleep? I have to dial, type somebody's bleep number in and my own extension, and then sit and wait, during which time usually someone has rung back on that phone and it's usually a relative asking to speak to their family member or to a member of staff. And so now the phone's engaged. Now someone who wants to ring me can't ring me. And so I go to another phone and bleep from a different phone. And now they're annoyed because I've bleeped them from the same ward on two different phones and so forth. And so it doesn't lead to a very good working environment, both for the people receiving or making the bleeps. So one of the things we talked about a while ago was looking at, is there a digital solution that will solve the bleep issue? And the other aspect of bleeps, I should say, actually, is that you have to bleep somebody to do the most simple of things. So, for example, if I need some paracetamol writing up for a patient, or there's a chest x-ray being done, could somebody look at it? It's not, maybe not desperately, desperately urgent, but it needs doing in the next few hours. But my only way of getting hold of somebody to do that is to bleep. Versus, I've got somebody who's really breathless, got some pain in their chest, looking unwell. Again, it's the same way of getting hold of somebody. It's the bleep. So the person receiving the bleep doesn't know whether it's for something urgent or for something routine. And where I think a digital solution can help is sift out. One, you can message, you can do text and conversational information, such as patient's really unwell, can you please come immediately, versus could you please prescribe drug X when you get the chance. And you can also reply back saying things are done, or you can also tell if somebody's read your message. And that's also a benefit because, yes, they read it, they'll get round to it, you don't have to stress or worry so much. So I think there's a real benefit of transforming our bleep system to something more modern, which we're all used to using in our day-to-day lives, but we don't use it in our day-to-day professional lives here. And if we can transform that, I think there's massive productivity gains to be had, and less interruption to your thought process, which makes it safer. There's a better responsiveness from people so that things get done in a timely way. And I think working lives on both sides of the bleep system would be much, much, much better.
A lot of what we've talked about today has been around communication, logistics, planning, kind of you know, sort of getting the right people or the right information to the right place at the right time. And I think it is interesting, isn't it, working in the health service, that it is a fantastically complicated system, and that sometimes the less sexy innovations, if you like, the ones that are actually quite simple and potentially are used in other areas and other parts of the world, are the ones that make the biggest difference and the biggest productivity gains, the biggest gains for patients, the biggest happiness for staff, perhaps.
Definitely.
As well.
I mean, I think the logistics is really important. So, you know, what the trust is looking at, how do you know when a bed's empty? And therefore, how do you know when to send a cleaner to go and clean the bed? And then who knows when the bed's cleaned and ready for the next person to go into that bed? All of these things are very manual at the moment, but if they could be somehow automated, somehow made instantaneous in a way, then that would reduce the workload on so many different people. The nurses won't have to interrupt their work to go and ring someone to come and clean the bed, or then ring someone to tell them the bed's available, etc. I think there's so many little things that we can do that would be really helpful in our working lives that would make things much, much more efficient. But I think it is around communication logistics. The hospital relies on it, but people don't see it as simply as that. Whereas I think when you've been working within the hospital systems for quite a while and you help try to shape and change things, I think you see that much more. It's those little things that are much more helpful to the masses of people. I mean, as a trust, we have something like 13,000 staff across 4 hospital sites, and then all of the staff in the community. We've got to be able to find a way of keeping them all linked, communicated with and to each other.
I think you've obviously been quite successful in implementing digital innovation and other innovation, Sadia. What do you see as the challenges to implementation, the barriers to implementation, and how do you mitigate against those?
I think everything you want to implement, I think it has its own unique barriers and challenges. And I think that it depends on what is it you're trying to land, what is that need, and how closely the two things marry up. And then trying to understand where people are coming from within the clinical service that will be affected by any change, and how that can be understood a bit better, essentially. So again, if we go back to the digital ECG, on the surface, everybody thinks, great, it's such an obvious solution, essential. And no one had a negative thing to say about the concept, but then everybody had an opinion about which was the solution. Was it solution A, which was also digital, which was B, also digital, C? And then there was the whole line, colored lines piece. So I think where we probably get bogged down by is that people have slightly differing views on what is the ideal solution. And I think where we try to shape things is to have people who are leading projects who, one, really do want it to succeed, can bring people with them. I think that's important. Can understand where colleagues are coming from when they have their concerns, and can appreciate those issues that they're bringing up. And I think it's important that those, I mean, we've mentioned them as barriers or issues, but people are coming at it from a genuine area of concern. I don't think they're wanting to be barriers. I don't think they're wanting to be negative or dismissive. They're trying to look after their service as best they can. And I think that's important to remember, that no one's here for the desire to be difficult. They're here for the patients and for the service and to make things better. So I think as long as that's maintained, I think you can come to an understanding and an agreement and a solution. It's important that that's the mainstay of what you do. But you have to feel, I personally reckon you have to feel your way through those issues and concerns. Hear people out, give them a chance, and then try to work through a solution. And sometimes people are nervous and anxious, and you've got to recognize their nervousness and anxiousness. Sometimes they don't have a solution besides actually just working through it and getting through the other side. Sometimes you can only get over your anxiety once the solution is in place.
Well, it's always challenging, isn't it, managing change, because, you know, ultimately everyone is destabilized a little bit by change, yeah. Whatever that may come in the form of. And allowing people to feel more comfortable is really important, I think, and bringing them along on the journey with you.
Yeah, I think you have to hear their discomfort and you have to listen to them and then work through that so that they understand that you've heard them. And I think it's sometimes important not to, I think sometimes the loudest person in the room may not have the same thoughts as the majority of people within that service. And I think one of the other things I try to do is make sure I get a broad understanding of what people think. And sometimes people are quiet in meetings, so it's important to find them in a quiet space when others aren't watching, or they feel they're being watched and therefore they can't say anything. I think some people don't like to disrupt, do they? They just want to let somebody who's a talker within the group do the talking. But they may agree with that talker or they may disagree with them. And it's important to try and find out why and which one they believe, because if everybody thinks it's a bad idea, there must be something in it. And are you just missing it?
I think you've already given some really good advice to innovators that are looking to bring in digital innovation, you know, in terms of finding that clinical or operational champion, but also recognizing that it's a team effort, it's a team sport, and yes, that there could be lots of different opinions in the room, and therefore trying to listen to all of those people and understand what their concerns are and work through that is, I think, a really good piece of advice. Do you have any other thoughts about how people should approach bringing in digital innovation?
Again, it depends on the innovation that people are trying to bring forward. I think the important things for me are we're also used to technology sort of just working, and I think it's got to be straightforward and simple. I think that in general, as a digital team, we've been trying to make sure that everything fits together nicely, because you asked a question earlier, do you get too much information? I think the danger we may be in danger of is having too many bolted on bits of tech or software that you then have to access individually. And that becomes quite difficult. So if you're trying to see a patient and then you have to dial into something different for the blood pressure, and then dial into something different to see a drug chart, and dial into something different to see their scans and everything else, then I think it becomes quite difficult, because you're going to get bored of trying to dial into all of those things. So anything that can integrate, that you can see the data in one place, would be really helpful. Sometimes you can put a bit of kit in and be told there's a problem that you never knew there was a problem for. And it's sometimes that you get shown things, there is a solution for a problem that isn't really a problem. But there are definite problems in healthcare. And I think trying to target those, and we talked about some of them around logistics and communication, and patient safety would be another one. We're increasingly seeing more patients at home. We're seeing more patients who've got dementia. We're seeing more patients who are at risk of falling or have fallen, as families also get jobs outside their traditional towns or cities. Then you're ending up with families that are more dispersed. So elderly parents, grandparents are in the town and the children and grandchildren have moved away. So how do we, looking at technologies that can help support families across those sort of boundaries, those are things that I think would be really valuable. And I think if you're trying to develop something, I would say get experts in early to try and understand what the real problems are within a service. That will help you shape what your technology feels like and what it's trying to achieve, which in the end will then mean that that technology will get adopted much more likely. Rather than someone seeing it as a nice to have, they might see it as an essential to have, because of those productivity gains, those safety gains, and the ability ultimately to keep people safe at home, rather than them feeling frightened or their families feeling frightened and them having to come into hospital.
I think that burning platform is really, really mm-hmm. important. Absolutely. And that's a great place to end. Thank you ever so much, Sadia, for coming to join.
Thank you. Thank you for the time.
I hope you enjoyed this latest in our series on opportunities for innovation on the front line of health and care. If this episode sparked some ideas or you'd like to know more about The Hill and the work that we do, please reach out to the team on connect@thehilloxford.org. Visit our website, www.thehilloxford.org, or connect with myself or The Hill page on LinkedIn.